continuing discussion of the name Kaha from Vishnu Sahasranam. Some explanation was already given of how this means who, W-H-O, who. Other connotations which are offered by the commentators. The first one is that Ka gives the understanding of shining, he who shines, who is lustrous. Now, this isn't just, of course, something made up by the commentators, but it's all based on Sanskrit language, from the typical accepted orthodox system of Vedic exegesis, where if you have to say something, you have to quote from Shastra, you have to quote from Panini, from Nyaya Shastra. So, Ka can be understood to mean luster, just like there is the well-known word Kanti. Kanti means Anga Kanti, the luster of one's body. So, Ka means he who shines, who is shining. His shining is so bright that normally we would be blinded, just like we can't look at the sun in the daytime. Maybe you can in, now it's, I'm speaking in February, maybe. In February in Sweden, you may not, even northern Sweden, you won't even see the sun. In England, maybe, if there's clouds over the sky, but in India at this time of the year, mostly it's bright, shining sun. In midday, well, yeah, and here in South India for sure. So you can't look at the sun. But yada ditya gato tejam jagad bhasayate kelam yach chandramasi yach chagno tat tejo vidhi mamakam. The splendor of the sun and the moon and fire that comes from Krishna, which means that Krishna's splendor is much more. We have the descriptions in Bhagavatam, Harivamsa, of Krishna going with Arjuna through the coverings of the universe and coming into the Brahma Jyoti. And, well, first of all, they came into tremendous darkness, and then Sudarshan Chakra went ahead to light up. And then in the dazzling brightness, Arjun could hardly see. Normally we can't. Our eyes adjust to the amount of light that there is. And we can only see within a certain range. If it's too bright, our eyes will be spoiled on the spot. With the eyes, you can see the iris, the size adjusts. Broader if there's less light, and very narrow if there's extra light. How can we see God who's so bright? Divyam dadati te chakshu. Krishna told Arjuna, I'm giving you eyes by which you can see my Vishvarupa. And Krishna's Vishvarupa is always there, but we don't always see it. Arjuna was given the divine vision by which he could see that. And one of the descriptions there is deeptimantam. It's shining so brightly. So again, this name, shining, it's similar to many names that have already been discussed and more that will be discussed. He is so bright and shining. But yeah, Krishna, by his arrangement, arranges that we can see according to our aptitude in our present karmic situation. Some animals have much better vision. The vulture, what a degraded species, low karma, poor karma. The vulture can see from a very great height. the hawk. I used to see the hawks when I was living in England. I used to go for walks in the country. The most common hawk there is called a kestrel, and they'll just be hovering on one spot in the sky, just looking down, and all of a sudden they'll drop down when they see a mouse. They, from such a height, they can see a little mouse, and they drop down and catch that mouse and have their midday meal program in that way. So they have a certain kind of vision according to their need. The young dog, baby, pup, they're blind, they can't see at all, but they can find their way to the nipple of their mother. Krishna is the Antaryami, the indweller. He guides them. Now we may say, what about in the spiritual world? It's just all completely bright. Well, Krishna gives eyes, so we can see in a way that seems normal to us. Otherwise, the spiritual world is very bright. It's not dull and dark like London. Srila Prabhupada described London, right? Dull and dark, generally. That's probably true of London, Ontario, as much as it is of London, England. So Krishna is bright. What is that brightness? There's just like I'm sitting in this makeshift studio. You can't see it, but I can see it. There are different lights, shades, certain light to create a certain ambience. Do we have to shine a light on Krishna? Put him in the spotlight. No, Krishna's self-effulgent. His luster is natural. His beauty is natural. It's not like us. If we want to look good, you have to shave regularly or not shave if you think it's better to have some stubble or a beard, comb the hair, put on eye lotion, body lotion, this lotion, lipstick, and so many things to try to make the body look good. And that the clothes we wear, even we put on an appearance by cutting a profile, the way we talk, the way we walk, it may be fashioned in such a way to project an image. Krishna's completely natural, no such thing. He's naturally bright, he's naturally beautiful, he's naturally lovable and respectable, so he doesn't have to cut a profile, posture, in order to attract others. He's automatically all attractive. He's naturally lustrous means that enlightenment, that English word is the enlightenment, in which the darkness of our ignorance is cleared away. That also comes from him. Whatever is shining is coming from him, coming from his brightness. Individually, we can see the body, human body. There's some brightness as long as the soul is there. And when the soul leaves, the body becomes devoid of luster. There's a difference between a living body and a dead body. And one major difference, well, the actual difference is that the soul leaves the body. And then the brightness of the soul, that leaves the body just looking pallid, pale. In the same way, the whole universe is, if there's any shining, if there's any goodness, it's all coming from him. And anything which we call evil is due to forgetfulness of him. So there's natural brightness, but at the same time we see people who say, oh, their face is black looking. What was that we see on the back of trucks in India? Buri Najawala, what is that? Tera Mukala. the people who look at you with bad eyes, with envy, or they have some bad feeling towards you. They wish ill on you, or your face is black. It may not be literally black, but it's the aura is there. Blue is there of depression in the aura. Green is there for envy. Yellow, when one is pure. So someone who's thinking of Krishna, they'll naturally be bright. Their outlook will be bright. Their aura will be bright. You'll feel uplifted coming into their presence. That was always... So many people felt that. Devotees especially, because they're more sensitive to the brightness of Krishna. They're attuned to Krishna. So when they come in Srila Prabhupada's presence, they feel automatically uplifted, and all doubts and sorrows which arise from ignorance, they're dispelled simply by being in Srila Prabhupada's presence. Krishna not only shines, but he also outshines everything and everyone else. Now that's a bit of a play on English words. To say someone outshines someone means he does better than others. So yeah, whether in shining, in philosophy, in power, in all opulences, Krishna is better than others. And that brings us to the similar meaning which Baladev Vidyabhushan finds for this name. That Ka means he who shines among philosophers who approach him. He gives them clear knowledge, not to those who are stuck in concepts of absolute duality or absolute non-duality. So in this way, he shines among, he's the best of all philosophers, and we can become great philosophers, or we can understand everything clearly by approaching Krishna. Now, the question may arise, well, Krishna's everywhere. We just had the name Vasati, who resides everywhere. But there is such a phenomenon as darkness. In fact, there's one hell called Andhatamisra, in which is extreme darkness, like being in a coal mine without a light. There's black, completely black. No sun. So if Krishna's in every atom, and he is so bright, then how is it that there are such places who are full of darkness? Well, it's similar to the understanding that, well, why isn't everywhere full of just total light? Well, that's the situation of the Brahma Jyoti. There's just light. There's no variety. So Krishna arranges that we can distinguish the variety, because variety is the mother of enjoyment. So that's Krishna's arrangement, that although he's so bright, there are very dark places for persons whose consciousness is very dark and who are suitable or who are destined to go to such places. Otherwise, Krishna is naturally very bright, and but he arranges for the sake of enjoyment that there is variety which facilitates happiness. In this material world, variety leads to unhappiness. And therefore, some perceptive people, they want to negate all variety so they can get free from unhappiness, but they don't know that the spiritual world is full of variety, which is full of happiness. Which brings us to another meaning of the name Ka, he who is of the nature of bliss. He's naturally blissful. Shankara quotes Chandogya Upanishad, Kang Brahma, direct quote from Shruti. Brahman, is happiness, or happiness is Brahma, kam Brahma. Happiness is Brahma. Now, we're not referring to the happiness which is experienced in Maya. There's Maya Sukh and Brahma Sukh. Brahma Sukham Tvanantam, the unlimited spiritual happiness. The happiness of this material world, it is illusory happiness. It is a perverse reflection of the unlimited happiness. Who is Krishna? Kang Brahma. There's happiness on the level of the body, sensual happiness. There's happiness on the platform of the mind, the senses, the intellect. We may appreciate some art or some music. So this is all various levels of sensual, bodily, mental, and intellectual enjoyment. But Krishna's happiness is on a level altogether transcendent to that. Now, in this regard, I'm going to discuss a little bit about the term kriyartham in Srimad Bhagavatam. This word appears three times in Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 8, chapter 22, text 20 is the first. And then there's also at Canto 10, chapter 37, text 23, chapter 10, chapter 46, text 39. There are four occurrences. And in the three which I've mentioned, is the word kriyartham. Artham means meaning, and it also means purpose. So it describes very importantly. It's not such a well-known term in the Bhagavatam, but it very importantly describes that the Supreme Lord appears in this world for the sake of Krira, playing for his own enjoyment. The word does appear also at Canto 10, chapter 65, text 24, but for another, it's not with the same connotation. So this is a very important thing. Why does the Supreme Lord come to this world? Various reasons are given in Bhagavad Gita, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Kunti's prayers. But one major important purpose, all the things he comes for, to glorify the dynasty of Yadu, to save the ocean, which is like a boat at sea, which is harassed by the wind, to uplift the devotees, to provide material for Srinvanti, Gayanti, Grananti, Abhikshnasha, for his devotees to remember him and chant about him. But one overarching reason is to have fun, to enjoy himself. Now, God is good. That is an axiom. And it's good to be good. We've heard the saying that you worship Krishna, but model your life after the ideal of Rama, Dharma. Because Rama is good, but Krishna, at least according to external vision, is not good. He's not always good. So it's good to be good, but having fun is better. How about that? Rama is better than Krishna. You see, Rama is very moral. Rama Dharma Vigraha. He is the very form of Dharma. He's very good. He won't do anything wrong. He cannot dream of doing anything wrong. Even his great love, Sita, he will banish her, causing great distress. But he can't even show any distress because he's supposed to be just detached and acting on the platform of dharma. So it's acting on the platform of dharma is required for human beings. It can be very tough. And Krishna definitely acts on the platform of dharma, but his dharma and our dharma is different. Our dharma, which Ram kindly shows to us, is to act according to the Vedic injunctions. And Krishna's dharma is just to enjoy himself, that's all, as he likes. So he can do all kinds of things. He's stealing bhaja, he's stealing the gopis' clothes, he's killing women. Well, Rama did that also, but he hesitated to do so, but he was told by, actually the first demon he killed and the first demon that Krishna killed were both in female forms. So when he was assured by Vishwamitra that it's okay to do so, then Ram did. But everything Krishna does, oh yeah, we hear Krishna told lies, and he had so many wives, there's a litany of complaints about him. But ultimately, everything Krishna does is for the benefit of everyone. We may be very lusty and desiring to enjoy many women, but if we hear about Krishna's enjoying with many women, and of course Krishna doesn't enjoy mundane women, then we will be cured from the hrit-roga kama, the heart disease of lusting after beautiful women. So Krishna, what he does is good. He shows you don't have to be bad to have fun. Generally, we think, have fun, okay, go out and drink some beer, go out, shout and yell in the street, and get into a fight, and insult a few people. That's some people's idea of fun. Make nasty jokes at others' expense. But Krishna, he was seen as bad by the demons. He killed them. That was his fun. But actually, he did great good to the world by doing so. But why Krishna comes to this world? Simply to enjoy himself. He's happy by nature, to indulge his happiness. But when we indulge my idea of happiness, forget all this four regulated principles, rising early, I'll just enjoy myself. We see devotees who are bright, we just discussed that, one who is bright and happy, they naturally become bright by serving Krishna. Those who are bright, and if they're caught again by Maya, they go away, and then they think, now I'll enjoy myself. So long I was following all these things. Then they go and so-called enjoy themselves. But they become dull. Their bodily luster becomes dull. Their countenance becomes dull. And their whole life becomes black. And it's noticeable, the difference. Just like it's noticeable when someone comes out of Maya to Krishna consciousness, how bright they become, and vice versa. So Krishna, he has fun and he enjoys himself and he's bright and he's happy, but his enjoyment is without degradation. Things that he does, we should not imitate. Follow the example of Ram. Don't follow the example of Krishna. If we try to imitate Krishna, we become degraded. There's no exploitation either in Krishna's enjoyment. He doesn't enjoy at the expense of others. Well, the demons may say, he killed our father, he killed her. But it's not that Krishna's envious of them and he removes the demons in the same way that Ram removes the demons. So it's not that Krishna and Ram are totally different. One major point of their coming to the world is to destroy the demons who are causing so many disturbances. Now, Krishna, we know, he's all attractive. So beautiful, so kind, so sweet, so mischievous. his flute playing, everything about him, his love, everything about him is attractive. Therefore, he's called Krishna. Why? What is the essence of his all attractiveness? Well, that's his Haladini Shakti, his bliss potency, who is Radharani, but his bliss potency. So because he's happy, he makes us happy. We naturally feel happy if we're in the presence of Krishna. We don't like to associate with people who are always morose and depressed. Unless our consciousness is very strong, it just drags our consciousness down. But if we associate people with bright and happy, then, oh, naturally we also become bright and happy. So he's, whatever he does, or just by his existing, just by meditating upon him, we become happy. That's Shantaras, just meditating upon him. But then what if we start to serve him? Then we become involved with him, become closer to him. Then we become more happy. And then we become friends, because they're friends with him. They're more involved, more parental affection, very, very intimately involved. Feeding the breast milk, wiping the stool from the backside, very intimately involved. And what to speak of the lovers? So in this way, Krishna makes us happy. Everything about Krishna. What is it? The food, Krishna prasad. Oh, it's just food. It's made from rice and dal and vegetables and spices and salt and all these things people are cooking. How many housewives in Tamil Nadu today cooked rice and sambar, rasam, all these things? Millions. The daily thing. But Krishna prasad, oh, that's a different flavor. That's filled with Krishna's adhar amrita. It's a unique taste, because it's infused with the nectar of Krishna's bliss. And of course, we want that all the dutiful, faithful housewives in Tamil Nadu and everywhere else in the world, cooking nicely for their family, for their husbands and children and their fathers, mother-in-law, they do for Krishna. All families should be devotees of Krishna, offer everything to Krishna, give prasad, and in this way the whole family will become very happy, putting Krishna in the center. So Krishna is by nature happy. He's very attractive to us because we are part and parcel of Krishna. And being part and parcel of Krishna, we have the same quality that we desire to be happy. But happiness comes from interaction with Krishna, not just from his brightness. He's bright, but we become brighter and brighter and brighter the more we become involved with Krishna. Because we desire pleasure, we are attracted to Krishna. And because he desires pleasure, he's attracted to us. If we serve him, then he becomes attracted to come closer to us. Even if we don't serve him, he's thinking of us and trying to uplift us. It is for the sake of the self that we love others. There's a considerable discussion about this. I think that's in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. I always get mixed up Brihadaranyaka and Chandogya. I believe it's in Brihadaranyaka. It's Brihadaranyaka. It's for the sake of the self that we love others. And this theme is taken up further in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that it's because of Paramatma, Krishna, that we, the Atma, seek pleasure. So ultimately, we seek happiness. Ultimately, we all seek Krishna. I want to be happy. You want to be happy? Serve Krishna. Or at least just start chanting Hare Krishna. But when we come to the platform of pure prema, pure love of God, selfless, unmotivated love of God, then the idea, I will be happy, let me be happy, is totally sublimated. The thought of my happiness, it doesn't remain there at all. One is prepared to accept unhappiness, one's own personal unhappiness, for the sake of serving Krishna, for making Krishna happy. That example is given. Mother Yashoda, if she sees a little drop of perspiration on Krishna's brow, which she thinks may cause him a little discomfort, to remove that, of course she'll just get her sari edge and wipe it, but if just an example is given, to remove that, she's prepared to suffer millions of lifetimes in hell. There's no question about the Yashoda going anywhere near hell. It's absolutely out. It's ridiculous, but it's just the example given that her way of thinking is just what is there for Krishna to be happy. And all the pure devotees in the spiritual world think like that. And it's just the opposite of how we think in the material world. So these discussions of Krishna, which are going on all over the world nowadays by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, they're all meant to change our consciousness so that we can stop thinking about me, 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 and think Krishna, 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 Krishna. Krishna is bright, Krishna is happy. Let us be bright and happy with ka, 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 Krishna. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpataru pyastra kipa sindhu vyabhija. Patitanam pavamebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo. Dante nithaya churnakam padaya nipatya kritva chaka kusheta shatameta daham bravime. Hey sadhava sakala eva vihaya duranga ranga chanda charne kuruta.